Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting episode of Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick. It's Annie, along with my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon on this awesome Friday. It is a great week for us. It's going to be a great discussion. And thank you for that beautiful introduction. I hope I'm coming in okay.
Yes, got to let you know, my co-host Cool Mike is on the road right now. Soon he'll be in the studio, and we'll get a better signal coming through. Want to remind everyone, you know, coming up next Thursday, June 14th, is Flag Day. Please remember to display our American flag proudly and properly. Even though there is a code of ethics on the flag, it is not law. So if someone disrespects it, unfortunately, Supreme Court back in 1989 said it is free speech. But keep your cool, you know, respect their free speech. You know, you can give them a piece of your mind. Matter of fact, I encourage you to give them a piece of your mind. But don't be afraid to display your own flag. And also remember, the Lieutenant Dan Weekend number 3 is coming up September 15th here in beautiful Beaufort, South Carolina at the Waterfront Park. It'll be at 8:30 p.m. with the Lieutenant Dan Band Concert with Gary Sinise. So go to ldw3.com, make your donation, buy your tickets, come on down to beautiful Beaufort, and have fun. Hey, you know, Mike, a friend of ours was in the Tuesday primary up in Michigan, Pete Konnichi, and unfortunately he did not... nomination. He did not win that primary. He sent a really, really nice thing in the email, which I got this morning. And Pete in Michigan wrote, "Dear friends and supporters, I have decided that it's time to step down from this race. I did not collect enough signatures to survive a challenge and have been removed from the ballot of the Republican primary this August. After carefully considering several plausible options which would allow me to remain in the race, I have decided that it is much more important to concentrate on removing Barack Obama from the White House, retaining control of the House, and gaining control of the Senate. All my efforts will be focused on these tasks. I truly appreciate all the support received from you, my friends and supporters, throughout the state. One of the most rewarding aspects of this race was going door to door, business to business, talking to people who are the true backbone of the state. The people of this state understand our American values and want our country back. With great respect and gratitude, Pete Connichi. I sent back Pete an email congratulating him on his valiant attempt and the courage he had to take it. And I added a little note saying to him, you know, I do believe that by doing what he did, he showed the youth and other people in the state that there are people willing to step into the breach of leadership and to take a stand to defend the Constitution and responsible government and governance. I told him that I feel that by doing so, he showed a shining example, and possibly the youth of today will follow it and become our future leaders. And I thanked him and said, God bless. So, Pete, I'm sorry you did not win the primary, but our hearts are with you. Well, you know, Mike, who is our dedication today, too? We have two. One you're doing, well, I'll do it for you, but the other one.
Well, I was actually, just if I can follow up on with Pete, I think in a lot of ways, I don't look at myself as a revolutionary, but I look at myself as a people person. As starting my own company, I realized when it comes to business, the business of the business, I'm not very good. So I seek help from our Chamber of Commerce. But as far as with people, I told Pete, I said, you know what? We're going to have another race in 2 years. I said, start your own blog talk show. Build with one listener, then go to two. Next thing you know, you got 200, 2,000, and you take it from there. You know, he's got a good message. And the fight on Tuesday, Michigan's primary was not on Tuesday. It's just it was that in that day, he got a challenge from another Tea Partier. This guy's a real idiot. I shouldn't say he's an idiot. He reflects us as far as political. But he's almost like a 50-year-old spoiled brat. I wanted to throw him right over my knee and just paddle his backside. He's such a baby. Well, anyway, lo and behold, whatever you want to call it, he did not make it on the ballot. But that doesn't mean that the fight is done. And you know something is that I think for those who fall off the mountain, at least they had the nerve to try to climb it. And you know what? That's for all of us. Maybe someday you'll be in office and many Doc Jones and many of us. But I'll tell you something is that BTR is a good launching pad to, you know, plant your seed. When you don't have millions of dollars in backing from the fat cats, you have to start somewhere. And the grassroots is where some of the greatest heroes of our time got started. Anyway, that was my comment regarding with Pete.
Okay. You know, he has a knack with talking to youth. So hopefully some of these youth he was talking to, you know, they may have been leaning towards being a liberal, but listening to his message turned around and said, well, you know what? I'm young. I can fight for what I want. Why does someone have to take it from me? And maybe he's right. Maybe this conservative message is the right message. And maybe they'll start to emulate him and follow that footstep and say, hey, this was the person that was a pivotal point in my life that changed it and put me on in the right direction. You never know who he influenced.
You're right. You're absolutely positively right.
You know, and I got to tell a true story. The first time I met my husband's stepdaughter, she was looking for direction in her life. And I was still active in the police department. And I was talking to her, and I was telling her about different options and different paths that my life took, you know, being in business and so forth and working for others, how I preferred it, what I was doing now, and why I enjoyed it. And I told her, you know, the benefits, the pros and cons of different things. And lo and behold, we lost touch, you know, through various circumstances through her family. And 20 years later, I asked her, you know, found out that she became a corrections officer because she was too old to become a police officer. And I asked her, that was a strange path. Why did she choose that? And she said, I influenced her. And I took a step back and I said, what? She said, yeah, that day he talked to me. you know, it was the turning point, and I made that decision. You never know who you influence when you talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think as we progress in the next year or so, depending on who wins, well, either way who wins, I think you're going to see more people get active and more people are going to want to play a role of political, because I think people are going to realize, number one, is they've been had and they've been lied to. And number two, they're going to realize if they ever get in front of the Constitution and read it themselves, they're going to realize just where government is and how intrusive they're getting. And, you know, you're right. Hopefully it will one person at a time, it'll spark an individual voter revolution. And who's to even say that we can't get a Tea Party president? You know, it's all in the hands of the people. At least for now, it still is. So, and, you know, Tea Party's doing very, very well. Tuesday was a huge, Super Tuesday was huge on the left coast of California. All but one Tea Partier ousted an incumbent Republican. So California is going to lose about five Republican congresspeople that are standing. And Nick Popovich is one of them. I mean, Major General Michael Crimmins, who retired to run for Congress. He left Afghanistan to run for Congress. So you know what, Annie? You're right. You never know who we're influencing right now, who we don't know, who's just up there, and bang. Next thing you know, that person's a city council person or school board or Congress, you know?
Now, if you remember, after the last elections in this past November, everyone was saying, why aren't you having rallies and stuff? And I says, wait. You may think we're quiet. You may, simply because we didn't get out and do huge rallies before the last election and everything else. You think that we're dead. Watch. We're going to silently sit back, wait, and watch to see what's happening, who's coming up, you know, what their message is, and watch what happens as they go through the primaries. And when we come closer to the elections, we're going to move into action. We're going to be quiet. We're going to be making our phone calls, knocking on those doors. You're not going to see the big rallies, and you haven't. You have not seen big rallies. You know, some people have done, you know, prayer rallies and this and that, but you don't see the massive large rallies we had the prior year leading into, you know, 2010 elections. I said, watch, mark my words. We're going to be working behind the scenes, and then you're going to see what we can do. And I proved right. I proved absolutely right. Have I not?
Well, to say California ousted not only that, I think California got struck by lightning.
Well, I think we lost Cool Mike. Well, Cool Mike, you're breaking up because I guess you're coming in and out of the area. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go forward with the dedication to our military hero today. Actually, there's two of them. I'm going to start with the first, which is Brigadier General Terrence J. Hildner. This is Dateline with Connecticut Times newspapers, February 6, 2012. Brigadier General Terrence J. Hildner of Fairfax, a highly decorated officer who received the Bronze Star Medal for combat heroism, died February 3rd in Kabul of apparent natural causes, military officials announced. Hildner, 49, was the highest-ranking officer to die in Afghanistan, according to Defense Department officials. Dateline, Fort Hood, Texas. Family and friends of the late Brigadier General Terrence J. Hildner joined Fort Hood leaders on Thursday, February 9, to honor the commanding general with a cannon salute fired at noon. Hildner, the 13th Expeditionary Sustainment Command commanding general, died in Afghanistan February 3rd of apparent natural causes. Soldiers within the 2nd Battalion, 20th Field Artillery Regiment fired 11 rounds in one-minute intervals. The cannon salute is a traditional courtesy bestowed upon the general officer following his or her death, and the number of rounds fired is associated with rank, according to a statement released by Fort Hood. A memorial service for the general was held on February 18th at the Spirit of Fort Hood Warrior and Family Chapel. He is buried at the Memorial Chapel at Arlington National Cemetery. This is a tragic loss for the Army, 3rd Corps, for our Central Texas community, said Lieutenant General Don Campbell, Jr., 3rd Corps and Fort Hood Commanding General. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends. The command will remain focused on assisting the family through these difficult times. Hildner served as commander of the 13th Expeditionary Sustainment Command at Fort Hood in Texas until his deployment to Afghanistan in December to support the NATO training mission. According to its website, the ESC performs a number of support functions, including maintenance on equipment and distribution of ammunition and clothing. The ESC includes the 1st Medical Brigade, which provides combat medical services and health care. The unfortunate and untimely death of Brigadier General Hildner was a shock to our unit and families, Colonel Knowles Atchison, 13th ESC Recommander, said in a statement released by Fort Hood on Saturday. Both forward deployments and we at home station are deeply saddened by this loss. We will all pull together through this difficult period and care for one another. In 2003, Hildner assumed the command of the 13th Corps Support Command Special Troops Battalion at Fort Hood. During nearly 3 years in command, his battalion was deployed twice, first to Iraq, supporting Operation Iraqi Freedom by providing logistical support to units around Joint Base Balad, as well as to Abu Ghraib prison complex. The second deployment came in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, providing both military and humanitarian support. The 13th ESC, led by Hildner, supports other units. Hildner served in Iraq during both Operation Desert Storm and the 2003 U.S.-led war. He also served in Kuwait and was part of the last U.S. patrol along the east-west German border before reunification of Germany. General Brigadier General Terrence J. Hildner of Fairfax, a highly decorated officer who received the Bronze Star Medal for combat heroism from July 2007 to July 2009, commanded the 23rd Quartermaster Brigade at Fort Lee, Virginia, training more than 20,000 soldiers annually. A native of New Haven, Connecticut, he began his career with the 3rd Army Cavalry Regiment at Fort Bliss after graduating from the University of Notre Dame in 1984. In 1988, he was assigned to Germany, where he commanded a ground cavalry troop. During his company command, Hildner's troop deployed to Kuwait and Iraq during Operation Desert Storm. All deaths in combat zones are investigated, said Sergeant Hogg, including that Hildner did not die in combat. He died 17 days shy of his 50th birthday. He is survived by his wife, Sydney Hildner, who was received from the commanding Sergeant General Leander, an artillery shell moments after was fired from the cannon in her husband's honor at Fort Hood on February 9th. Rest in peace, Major General Hildner. All right, I have a second one. When we did our last broadcast on June 5th, I was quite remiss. I did something that I have not forgiven myself for, and I apologize to our listeners and to Cool Mike. I neglected to mention that the following day was D-Day, and every year I do blast up on Facebook, MySpace, tweet, and always asking people to remember D-Day, and I failed to do that on Tuesday, and I apologize. But this was in our local paper, and here in Beaufort, South Carolina, we have a lot of retired military personnel. And sometimes that person living next door could be someone that was extremely famous, and you don't even know it. And in this case, this man lived among us very quietly, and he is remembered on this day, D-Day, even though he passed back in 1990. And we will remember him also here today. He was a definite quiet man. And a very, very heroic man. Benjamin Hayes Vandervoort was a 29-year-old enlisted man with a bride back home when he became an American hero on D-Day. His role 68 years ago today was made famous by John Wayne in the movie The Longest Day. But as a Hilton Head Island retiree, the spoken man called Vandy preferred to blend in like the brown cypress houses in the woods. He and his wife, Nidra, came in 1967 to live on Marsh Wren Road in Sea Pines near South Beach. Former Islander John Jakes said he and Vandervoort talked for years before Jakes knew the man in tennis shoes and black horn-rimmed glasses was the first to hit the ground in Normandy and was one of World War II's most decorated soldiers. In those days, Jakes said people left their medals at the bridge. Vandervoort was promoted to lieutenant colonel 5 days before he parachuted into France on D-Day. When he landed at 1:41 a.m., he was a commanding officer of about 600 men in the U.S. Army 82nd Airborne Division, 2nd Battalion, 505 Parachute Infantry Regiment. "I had a little hard luck on landing and banged up my foot," Vandervoort said in a military debriefing. His leg was fractured just above the ankle. He tightened up his boot and used his rifle as a crutch until a grandmotherly French woman gave him some hand-carved crutches. His men helped liberate the village of Sainte-Marie-Église, which then repulsed a much larger and better-equipped German column on the main paved road to the invasion beaches. He later was a fearless leader at Operation Market Garden, the subject of a book by Cornelius Ryan in the movie A Bridge Too Far. At the Battle of the Bulge, Vandervoort was hit in the head by shrapnel, which took him from the battlefield and cost him an eye. He was awarded 2 Distinguished Service Crosses, the Bronze Star with a V for Valor, 3 Purple Hearts, and the medals from thankful foreign countries. He was selected as the Outstanding Ground Battle Commander for all of World War II when the U.S. Army Center for Leadership selected one colonel or lieutenant colonel from every war in American history. Vandervoort then served his nation in the Foreign Service and the CIA. On Hilton Head, he served on the Episcopal Church vestry, played golf, planted tomatoes, and surfed fished near the house. He said he was thankful when the septic tank didn't clog, when the house guests stayed no more than 3 days, and when he got through Bluffton without a speeding ticket. Vandervoort risked everything for us to enjoy such common freedoms. Yet he told Army debriefers 2 months after D-Day, "I feel that I have very little for prosperity at the moment." He died on Hilton Head in 1990 after a fall. Nidra died 10 years later. On this D-Day, they rest in silence by majestic oaks in Beaufort National Cemetery. Okay, for that, I'm going to play My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington, because these men are America.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up.
Remember to turn my mic up. Those things don't get any easier. Whoa, that was a hard one. Ah, but
certainly sounded like it was hard.
No, but I do fault myself for being so remiss back on Tuesday, and that's not like me. You know, I was rushing to go out to the doctor, and my head just was not where it belonged at the moment. Hey, remember a while back? I actually said this back on Tuesday, too, that the rats are starting to desert the ship.
Yeah.
And I said that, you know, people are starting to say things that are just not making Obama and his administration come into light in very, very, how do you put it?
Basically, they're becoming a bunch of standard politicians, backstabbing, abandoned ship. whatever you name it, running for, you know, it's almost like this. There's so many months for the election, and obviously what happened in Wisconsin was a message. But a firecracker went off, and they're dashing almost like an M80. I mean, it is almost since about 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday. It has been what liberal is stabbing who in the back on national television. I mean, it's actually funny to a point.
Well, I'm going to start off with one of the less innocuous ones. Ed Rendell, the former DNC chair. I believe he was on CBS. And
he had the governor of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, former governor of Pennsylvania and also the former DNC chair. This is what he had to say back on Sunday.
We ought to start today.
You supported Hillary Clinton strongly.
Sure.
You think we'd be in a different place if she'd been elected?
I think she would have come in with a lot more executive experience. I think the president was hurt by being a legislator only. For example, health care and stimulus, two bills that I think did good things for the American people. Too much of it was left up to the Congress. He sort of said, here's my concept, you guys flesh it out. I think Hillary Clinton would have sent them a bill and said, here's what I want.
You also...
Did you hear that? Hillary would have been a better president.
Here's what I want.
Now, I was listening to Hannity going into the 2010 elections. And at that time when Hannity was on, I was, you know, habitually traveling on the road, so I'd have him on the XM radio. And he would start in with the Stop Hillary Express. And I would be screaming at the radio going, you have no idea what you're asking for and what we're going to get. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And every time I heard it, I kept on screaming. And my husband said one day I was turning red in the face. And he goes, you know, how do you know he's going to be worse? And I said, look at the record of what he has said in public and what he has failed to do and what his background is. I says, take the whole package. Don't listen to what he's saying today because it doesn't match. And I said, we're all going to be in for a very difficult road. And everyone kept on saying, oh, you're so wrong. We need change. We need something different than the standard politician. And I says, you're making a mistake. You'd be better off with Hillary in there if you end up with a Democrat than him. No one wanted to listen to me. Well, guess what? Ed Rendell proved I was right. And you know what's going to happen with that soundbite? Within a week, it's going to be in a Romney ad. They're writing the ads for Romney right now. You don't have to do anything. You just sit back and wait for another one of these former Obama supporters to pop up out of the woodwork, like Artora Davis, who just deserted the Democratic Party. You take his statements and his picture, makes a great Romney ad. You take Ed Rendell and his picture as he's saying this video clip, it makes a great TV ad. They're writing the ads for us. They are writing them for us. Now, I've got two here from Bill Clinton. I'm going to do the one he did last week. And this, again, was, I believe this one might have been an ABC interview. And let's play this. I want to make sure I got the right clip because I had two of these. And I just want to make sure this is the right one. Here we go.
Governor Romney keeps talking about his experience at Bain Capital as a producer of jobs and that he had 25 years in the private sector. It seems to play with a certain group, but do you think that really will affect people and think that he can produce jobs that the president can't?
I think it will affect some people who relate well to businessmen. And I think he had a good business career. There's a lot of controversy about that, but just if you go in and you try to save a failing company, and you and I have friends here who invest in companies, you can invest in a company, run up the debt, loot it, sell all the assets, and force all the people to lose their retirement and fire them. Or you can go into a company, have cutbacks, try to make it more productive with the purpose of saving it. And when you try, like anything else you try, you don't always succeed. Not every movie you made was a smash hit.
That's for sure.
So I don't think that we ought to get into the position where we say this is bad work. This is good work. I think, however, the real issue ought to be what has Governor Romney advocated in the campaign that he will do as president? What has President Obama done, and what does he propose to do? How do these things stack up against each other? That's the most relevant thing. There's no question that in terms of getting up and going to the office and, you know, basically performing the essential functions of the office, a man who's been governor and had a sterling business career crosses the qualification threshold. But they have dramatically different proposals, and it's my opinion anyway that the Obama proposals and the Obama record would be far better for the American economy and most Americans than those that Governor Romney's laid out. That's what the election ought to be.
Wait a minute. Did he say going into the office and actually doing the work? Let's see. Trips to Indonesia, trips to Spain, to Hawaii, to the Bahamas, to Martha's Vineyard, golf outings every single weekend. Let's see. Who's in the office more often? Who do we have, Obama or Romney? Obama or Romney? Gee, this Romney side, the right side, seems to be, you know, heavier than the left side. The left side is just going up in the clouds. If you listen to people talking about Romney, he was the first one in the office and the last one to leave. That sounds like the same worth ethic that we had with Ronald Reagan, didn't we?
Well,
instead we have
he's certainly
we have
no
all
Ronald
these...
Reagan, Annie. I mean,
no,
you're,
he's not.
You're,
but
you're,
I said work ethic.
Well,
like
he,
the work ethic.
Yeah, well, where people don't understand, Bill Clinton brought this up. Romney never went into thriving companies. He went into companies that were 1 foot in quicksand. And, you know, you have to make tough decisions. Business is business. If you don't do business as business, guess what? There is no business. And the bottom line is that you either go into a company with the idea of saving the company and keeping whatever resources, employees, et cetera, you have, or guess what? You say somewhere out here, there's an iceberg. Somewhere below that iceberg is a ship. And, you know, you have to make a decision. And
I haven't gotten to my main point yet, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to shout out to Doc Jones and to Jermaine. It looks like our guest that Jermaine had on his show about 2 years ago is going to be a no-show. I think I scared him away with some of my postings. So Doc Jones and Jermaine, call in and let's get a round table going over here. So let's make up for this guest that I think is a little too much of a chicken to show up.
We can't have Jermaine calling in. Jermaine's been causing trouble all night long over in Pal Talk.
So,
like a kid in a candy store.
Pick up the phone, 917-889-3675, and let's get a roundtable going on this one. Now, I'm going to play the second Bill Clinton clip, and I'm going to tie the two of them in, and I'm also then going to tie in exactly what Ed Riddell said, and I want you to really think about what I'm going to say after we listen to this one. This was just this weekend on Sunday Talking Head Show.
President also sat down with our very own Maria Bartiromo today for a wide-ranging interview on the euro crisis, the economy, and what some are calling the impending fiscal cliff. And Maria joining us now from the NYSE with a debrief. Maria, great to see you. Thanks for coming on the show. What did you and the former president talk about?
Thank you so much, Brian. Well, it was great to catch up with President Clinton, particularly now during this very fragile time in our economy, given the fact that President Clinton oversaw this economy during the go-go days of the 90s, the real vibrancy in the economy, and, of course, was the last president to balance the budget. In fact, led a budget surplus. Now, he was very concerned about what's happening in Europe. He said that the economy here is anemic, of course, evidenced by those jobs numbers last week. He was pretty downbeat about the U.S. economy. And one thing that he stressed just a few minutes ago was the fact that we should avoid a fiscal cliff at all times and by all means. In fact, he suggested that the Bush tax cuts should be extended as well as those spending programs. Bottom line, don't let this go too far to get out of control. Avoid that fiscal cliff at all costs.
What about this upcoming fiscal cliff? Because a lot of people are worried, and the markets certainly have been reacting to the idea that these Bush tax cuts will expire at year end, along with the spending programs that will expire. Should those programs and those tax cuts be extended?
What I think they should do is to find a way to keep the expansion going. And I think the as weak as it is here, you know, unemployment in the Eurozone, I think, is 11%. And Germany's doing well, and a lot of the small countries are doing extremely well, many of which are not in the euro. But they're trying to figure out a way to promote growth. And what I think we need to do is to find some way to avoid the fiscal cliff, to avoid doing anything that would contract the economy now.
And he followed up with that by saying one way, which certainly would create pressure, is to raise taxes on folks and cut those very programs that are so important. We also talked about Wisconsin. Of course, voters going to the polls today. We will learn.
All right. He wants to extend the Bush tax cuts, and he said including for the wealthy. Now, I'm going to say this. You've got Bill Clinton, President of the United States, one of the most astute Democratic maneuvers out there in the political field. He doesn't say a single word without having already thought thoroughly about what he's saying. Ed Riddell, DNC chair, former Pennsylvania governor. He is a political animal. He lives and breathes this. He doesn't make a statement unless he has a purpose for it. He wants Hillary Clinton to run next time. He's going to groom her. He walked up to her in a party and said, "Do you think I'm in good enough shape to run for president?" And she said, "Heck yeah." She said, he said to her, "You know, in 4 years, you're going to be the same age I am. You're in shape to run for the presidency." They want her in there. I'm telling you, they don't say a single word without having a purpose. They're doing everything they can to undermine Obama. They're not saying this as an accidental goof. They may be backpedaling it to make it look good. They may be backpedaling it to pander to Obama, like saying, "Oh, yeah, 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 I'm going to campaign for you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to do everything to help you." But they are setting him up for the fall. They're giving us the sound bites we need for those campaigns. Whatever we need for the ads, they're handing us on a silver platter. They don't say these things as an oops, "Oh, I misspoke." These aren't misspeaking. These are deliberate, deliberate things they're saying, Mike. Well, I think Mike turned his mic off. But we have on the line Jermaine. Jermaine, welcome aboard today. How are you doing?
Hey, Annie. How are you doing?
What do you think about what they're doing?
About Bill Clinton and Ed Rendell?
Yeah.
Matter of fact,
Mike's call just dropped.
Yeah, they're very politically calculating. They know exactly what they're doing, and I don't think Bill Clinton has forgotten the way that Hillary was treated in the 2008 election. And I think this is pretty much what it's all about.
Absolutely. They've been planning this. And everything they say is sort of like the two-faced thing. Yeah, I'm going to be saying yes, yes, on this hand. On the other, they're undermining him deliberately. And they don't want to see him reelected. They feel they have a better chance if they let Romney in and then do a Bush number on him, saying it's Bush's fault, it's Bush's fault. This way they can say it's Romney's fault. See, you know, you blamed it on Obama doing all the wrong things, but look what he did. He made it worse, so you need us back. They need an excuse to say that.
And then Obama's not really making anything better for himself. Today in his press conference, he actually said that things in the private sector are going well, or they're fine, in his own words. I mean, this guy just doesn't get it.
No, and I caught a snippet because right behind it, and thank God someone's there telling Romney, get a pair of balls out there. And as soon as he says something like this, jump on it. And he did. And I saw, and I thought his face turned red going, what is he talking about in the private sector? Is it better for anyone out there now? It's like, no. But then he also blamed it on the Republican Congress for not passing a budget and everything else. He says the Republican Congress can't pass any bills.
you would think that he has control of both the House and Senate. The Republicans have cooperated with Barack Obama more than the Democrats. NDAA, it was the Democrats who opposed it. It was Republicans who helped them. The extensions onto the onto all the unemployment and the extension of the budget, Republicans. The Patriot Act extensions, Republicans. So that's just an outright lie. I think Jermaine's accurate, too. You know, honestly, you have – I don't want to say that these people are stupid, but they certainly must have short-term memory, because just 3 weeks ago, it was the Republican Party that pushed the NDAA that Barack Obama was pushing, and the Democrats fought it, but they lost. So, I mean, that just doesn't cut it. The GOP Congress has aided and abetted Barack Obama on many crimes.
You know, Barack Obama may decide that he might not want to run on the economy. He might. I mean, of course, it's going to be the overbearing issue, but his foreign policy is way stronger than his domestic policy. And I would have never thought that in 2008. You know, I mean, he has actually, you know, continued Bush's foreign policy, you know, verbatim, so... He might want to try to switch the conversation a little bit, because he can't win on the economy.
One thing, Annie, that piece you played on Bill Clinton, you know why? Just 15 years ago, he was claiming about the 1%, blah, blah, blah. Now Clinton is the 1%, so now he's for it, because he's made all this money.
Yep.
He's, listen to this. Hang on a second. I got it written down here. $3,750 per hour per speaking engagement plus expenses.
Wasn't you, Mike, that was talking about the $40,000 plate dinner with Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yes.
That was the lady from I think I got that from Annie, but anyway,
Yeah, you
grand.
Got that from me. I give you all
okay.
your good ideas.
I don't mean to rain on a parade here or to be stupid, but I will for a second. If you're standing in line at McDonald's and you buy a value meal, say it's $7, you can times that an awful lot till it gets to $40,000. $40,000 a plate. Lloyd Benson, when he ran with Dukakis, had $10,000. Boy, talk about inflation.
And they're
you know,
selling
Barack
dinners
Obama,
with the president, too. Wasn't that part of it?
Yeah.
You could win a dinner with President Obama?
Yeah, with the president and first lady. And then you had a private concert with Celine Dion.
Oh.
The gold, the gold members.
This is
gold
for the
members got a meeting with them, too. The gold members got to, like, talk to them for, like, 60 seconds.
But they're all part of they're part of the common man, not part of the 1%.
Wow.
All right, tell me, what part of the common man can afford a $40,000 plate dinner plus a private concert with Celine Dion? You know? So they give away only two tickets to this whole thing, right? So you get to sit with them. Well, you know what? I was hysterical, again, listening to my mic while I was running around, and it happened to have been Glenn Beck on. And I hear a lot of moans in the crowd right now. Yes, I was listening to Glenn Beck. I might be the female one. Anyway, I was hysterical. He was telling people to keep on entering, and they said, what we want is some of the biggest, fattest, backwoods people, you know, rednecks, to end up winning. And I want you to sit right next to Michelle Obama.
Well, speaking of that, did you guys see the excerpts from it? There was somebody who was like just a couple rows down. They have to be rich because there's no way you could get this close to sitting with these people. But I mean, this lady was huge. She had like a couple of hippos in a burlap sack, and she's standing like not next to Michelle Obama, but like one or two over. And she stands up and claps. I always love this. With Barack Obama, they don't even let him finish a sentence that they probably four words before he's done, they got to stand up and clap. So he's like, and so today we're going to, they don't even let him finish what he's saying. And I mean, I think to myself, you know, this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause.
Don't you know they have teleprompters for the audience that flash applause, laugh, laugh?
They actually do, Annie. I got to see, I saw Obama in Raleigh here when he was running in 2008, and they actually tell you when to applause and when to clap and when not to.
Well, Jermaine, did you take a barf bag with you?
No, I didn't.
Annie,
it wasn't my idea to go, so but I had to. I'll just leave it at that.
I told you, I'm on a tear today. I'm on a tear.
Well, since you're on the tear, Annie, I have a question. When you were a police officer, were you ever in the middle of a dispute, maybe where one side would tell you their side, the other side would say their other, and you kind of had to maybe unfold where in the middle lies the truth, who's lying, who's not lying?
How about maybe 40 or 50 times a night?
Well,
duh.
Since the topic came up here, I keep getting booted out of this show called Lord Voodoo on Pal Talk.
What'd you do?
I've never been kicked out for years until this screen name GGT183 started entering right behind me and causing a problem.
What'd you do, Mark?
And now I'm banned. I'm not sure, Jermaine. What did I do? Now, Annie, if I'm going there 6 months never having a problem and all of a sudden, and I don't mean to get racial, but today's our racial show, so a black man enters the room and all of a sudden all hell is breaking loose. You got the administrators all fighting amongst themselves. Thank you, Jermaine. You got people swearing, dropping F-bombs left and right to each other. Wouldn't you say that maybe it is maybe a new neighbor has moved in that is causing all of a sudden the trouble on the block?
Gee, and you wonder why I go to bed before Jermaine's show comes on.
Oh, you
I
wait till tonight.
Anything. What voodoo disrespected me? So.
Well, unfortunately, no. Actually, I should say, very fortunately, I will be up in Yemisi picking up my son from the train station who's coming in to visit. So I will not even be anywhere near Blog Talk Radio. So you cannot blame me for anything the two of you do.
Well, you'll be
back by then, won't you?
When
the sun goes down, Annie is hiding.
Wait a minute.
I'll be
time
on
are you
my
picking
favorite
him up
park
at, school. Annie?
Huh?
What time are you picking him up at?
Oh, nine. It'll be about nine, and it's like about an hour and a half back. So we're going to stop for something to eat. And I'm going to tell you, anyone that comes to South Carolina, you have to stop in a place called Harold's Country Club. It is a place you have to see.
Where's that?
To believe.
Where's that at?
It is a place called Yemisi. And if you look at the history of the Marine Corps as they come into Parris Island, it was where the train stopped when they brought the recruits in before they bussed them over to Parris Island. It was the relay point.
What did they serve, burgers or?
Well, they only serve certain nights a week. But Harold's Country Club still pumps gas.
Wow.
You can go in there for a six-pack and some pig's feet.
So you pull up and they pump your gas like on Andy Griffith Show or something?
Now it's self-serve. But while you're having your wife pump your gas and buy your beer for you, you're sitting at the bar having a cold one.
Oh, cool.
And
Country Club.
Or you can just turn around and say, honey, you know, why don't you check the tires and change the oil while I play a game of pool? True story. True story.
Yanni, do that to you, Annie.
No, I do that to him.
I'm actually looking at a picture of it. It looks like a cool little stop. It says they have the old sign up there, gas, 54 cents a gallon. Jeez.
Well, actually, before he passed away, I met Harold. And this was back in, I think, 98 or 99. And he had opened up the back end area. The kitchen is huge, huge. They do three seatings on Thanksgiving of fried turkey. And I think they said they do something like 50 at a time. They deep fry 50 turkeys at a time. And they serve them up. And then the next sitting, another 50. And the next sitting, another 50. We had steak there, and unfortunately, that was when Yanni choked, and I was trying to do the Heimlich on him. And,
funny.
True story.
No, it's like you're like, unfortunately, Yanni was choking. I'm like, it was just like a minor inconvenience there, okay?
I mean, it was damn good. just, you know, when someone's choking next to you and then they hock it up on you, it's like, oh, well, I'm not finishing this steak. But fortunately, there was a Marine there from the Marine Corps Air Station. And, you know, I did say thank you over the air shortly after that. His name was Bob. He came up because I'm short. And Yanni's 6'3". I'm 5'3". You know, the height thing was not working out there. And the Marine was close to his height and just two pops. And, you know, Yanni stopped choking. But, whoa, that's not fun.
Hey, Monica,
you actually saw it shoot right up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just
like in the Nutty Professor?
Yeah.
Really in the Hamlet maneuver in that restaurant.
And, you know, when everyone else was sitting around the bar, just kept on eating.
Hey, Mike, I just read that I'll Have Another, the horse, is not going to participate in the Belmont Stakes.
No, I've been withdrawn. Yeah, a couple of days
ago.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, another horse was training on the track the same time that I'll Have Another was on it, and it threw the rider and got loose and ran amok. And as it came around the track, it brushed up against I'll Have Another and hit him in the back leg. And they thought at the time nothing happened, that it was just like a minor brush. But they said nope. And then yesterday they said, well, I think we got a problem. They could pull him. And then today they confirmed that they could pull him. He's going to be scratched.
Yep. So
the curse
no
of Triple Crown continues since Secretariat.
What the hell did I walk into today? Man, oh, man. It's like, it's just, Lord have mercy. Oh, that just ruins everything for me. But anyway, oh, well.
Oh, well, Doc Jones' house, so I keep on trying to tell him to call in. He probably he comes up this way, up 21 and 17. So he may know about Harold's Country Club. So, Doc, if you come in this way, let me know. We'll meet up at Harold's. We'll have a cold one together.
This is a really cool menu, too. I'm looking at it. This is, this is a very reasonably priced place.
Absolutely. With all the fixings, everything just it's served like a buffet-type style. And it's all local people. And I got to tell you, the story of Harold's, the way it started, it was a gas station garage. And Yemisi, being a small little bumfuck town, yes, I said that, out in the backwoods of South Carolina, you feel like you're in the middle of Deliverance, honestly. And the locals, when he closed the gas station, would all join together, and they'd bring potluck. And they'd all sit around, and it was a local place to gather, you know, because there was no bars or anything around. And one night, a bunch of them joking around, they said, you know, Harold, why don't you open up a country club here? And he thought about it and thought about it, and he said, why not? So he started it with just a couple little tables, a small little kitchen. But what happened was he ended up having a fire. It didn't destroy the place, just, you know, burnt out the kitchen and everything. So he had to start rebuilding. And he said, oh, what the heck? I'm going to knock out the garages in the back and make it all into tables. And the garage door is still there, the actual garage doors, and they work. And I'm going to expand the kitchen. I'm going to do all this and that. And he did. He rebuilt the whole thing, but kept it everything original. And you go in there and you see the old signs, and he's got old memorabilia. He still sells bait and fishing lines and shrimp nets and everything else and everything that goes with fishing. And you can go in there and pick up your bread, your eggs, you know.
Does he have live minnows and everything?
I believe it's live and frozen bait he's got there, yeah.
Awesome.
And his nephew now runs it. You know, he passed away, maybe 5-6 years ago or so, because I saw him in the doctor's office shortly before he passed. And a nice man, deaf as anything. As a stump. And it was fun listening to him try to answer the phone. But it's just a neighborhood place. His family and most of the people that run are all related, all live in the local area. And you know, when you sit there, you're running into locals. So it's a fun place, and people actually travel all over. It was written up, I believe, in Gourmet and Southern Living also. So, yeah.
Mike, did you just get that link I sent you in private chat?
The smoking gun?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, I'll tell you, if Homeland Security ever monitors us, they're all going to be standing, they're all going to be like, Mr. President, look what these people are saying about you. Oh, my God. They got like a little dummy of Obama, and they got him strung up on the rope. Like they're listening.
Oh, no. No.
No, it's Pastor Terry Jones. He has this. You remember the guy that wanted to burn the Quran?
Oh, geez.
He's at it again.
He did burn the Quran. He did burn the Quran.
Yeah, he did. He did it again.
He's standing underneath Obama hanging is the gay pride flag. Which today kicks off. I don't know if you two know about this, but today is the official kickoff of Gay Pride Weekend.
Oh, yes. And don't you know President Obama is going to a LGBT rally?
You forgot the B. Don't forget the bisexuals.
I did. I said LGBT.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected.
Gay, bisexual, and transgender. What the hell is a transgender?
Transgender is a guy with it's female with a weenie.
They have all the surgery and switch over.
Oh gosh.
You know, like
No. That's sex change. No, a transgender has a weenie and boobs.
Oh, a hermaphrodite.
So whatever you want to call them, but
do we really want this stuff being taught in our schools? I mean, really?
Well, as I had said over a year ago, I think I read on our show, I actually pulled the flyer off the school board. This was a middle school, and they were having a after-school meeting in, I don't think it was in the school, but it was somewhere around there at a place. And I thought to myself, okay, they're inviting kids in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade to come to this is nothing but a place for the dirty old people to find young prey.
Absolutely.
And I thought, man, oh, man. So I brought this up, and, of course, I was the bad guy. Why'd I even bother to bring it up to the vice principal that, you know, all of a sudden I'm a homophobe? Forget the fact that primarily my old job, basically 100% of the people there were gay. But anyway, either way, I'm thinking to myself, all right, if you're a parent and your 12-year-old goes to this and you really don't care, oh, God. But either way, I think that, you know, as we look at, Annie, you were going to mention about Barack Obama, he's kind of christening the weekend. He's breaking the bottle of champagne to kick off.
Yeah, at a fundraiser with them.
Yeah. Well,
do y'all believe the stories about Barack Obama and Larry Sinclair? Do y'all actually believe the story?
Oh,
that Larry
Sinclair had the libel lawsuit thrown out because he proved it true. Larry Sinclair recently, as of I think about a month ago, and I brought it up on the show here, that Larry Sinclair successfully had the lawsuit kicked out, the libel lawsuit for slander. He proved everything in his book was true. He proved everything that he's been saying is true, and he's been exonerated.
Well, supposedly, back in the day, Barack Obama and Oprah's husband, wasn't his husband at the time, and it may have been Jesse Jackson Jr. or another Chicago area, somebody big up in the black community. Apparently, there was a joke that they did a choo-choo train on Oprah, and they were calling, I think it was Jesse Jackson, they were calling him the milkman because I guess there was no room for him in the at the back end, so he was like hooking up with Oprah. Well, anyway, same thing, you know, she was going to sue, and as we all know, Oprah has a lot of money. Oprah has won many a lawsuits. The Texas cattleman lost against her. Oprah dropped the case. What does that tell you?
Mm-hmm.
So but you know, all that stuff went on, Jermaine. I mean, they were. I'm not making an excuse for them, but you know what? Things happen. I'm in that kind of business, as far as nightclub, all kinds of stuff happens like that. You know.
Well, that would mean Obama's gay. Any man that has those type of feelings towards another man is gay. Period.
Well, I think you would actually call him bisexual.
Before we get into this discussion, we're going to need Sarge. So unless he's here, we are not going there.
No,
we are
no,
certainly
not.
Listen, actually, Annie's correcting us. No, he's bi.
anyway, I wanted to go into something else. Something else I wanted to do a rant on. Has anyone
Great
heard
idea.
About Bill Press? Has anyone?
I know who he is.
Yeah, I know
who Bill Press
is, but I haven't heard any news
about
him.
Bill Press has his own radio show, and I'm going to play a short little clip from it, and let's see if your blood doesn't start boiling on this
Bill
one.
Bill Press, he used to be on Crossfire, I think.
Okay, here we go. Okay.
It is a major crusade of mine, a major cause of mine, and that is to get rid of the Star Spangled Banner. Now, I know you're going to say I'm not a true American, I'm not patriotic. I don't think patriotism has anything to do with it. The national anthem is just absolutely monumentally unsingable. I mean, there's so much wrong with it. I don't know where to start, but it's an abomination. First of all, it ranges two octaves. Most people can only do kind of one octave. I mean, when you think about it, it's bombs bursting in the air, rockets, red glare. It's all kinds of, you know, a lot of national anthems are that way too. All kinds of military jargon, and the land. There's only one phrase: the land of the free, which is kind of nice. And the home of the brave? I don't know.
I mean, I get that part of it.
Are we the only ones that are brave on the planet? I mean, all the brave people live here. I mean, it's just stupid, I think. I'm embarrassed every time I hear it.
I'm embarrassed of you, Bill Press. I mean, home of the brave? Well, say that to the firefighter that's climbing into the building to yank your burning ass out of there. Say it to the police officer that stands in front of the bullet that was aimed at you by the robber. Say it to the soldier that prevented someone kidnapping you in a foreign land. Say it to a soldier who has given up their life so that you have freedom to this asinine stupidity.
How do you really feel, Annie?
All I can say is, what a douchebag. I mean,
he certainly is.
I mean, when
Bill
he said
Press.
Military jargon, I mean, he gave himself away. He hates the military. That's what it's all about.
And you can say he was two octaves.
Well.
Two octaves? Most songs are more than two octaves. They go up to three octaves in some. If you have something that's only two octaves, you probably have a very – if you have something that's one octave, you've got something that's rather monotone. You've got no music there at all. You know, that someone's going to be talking like the whole song goes like this. Oh, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't work, you know. You have to have variety and change in your music. Trust me, two octaves is not a difficult song.
You must have listened to the Roseanne Barr version of the Star Spangled Banner.
So, that was like in the 80s, wasn't it?
I don't know when it was, but she just made a complete mockery out of it.
Oh, absolutely, grabbing her crotch. But he's complaining about something that's only two octaves. Well, the song was originally, if anyone knows the history of it, it was a drinking song for an all-men's club in England. They used the melody from a drinking song to turn it into our national anthem. Now, some people would think that's an insult, but our Americans have a sense of humor. You know, hey, listen, we're going to toast to you. You know, we won the war, and now we're going to turn around and take our cheer, our mugs of beer, and clank them together and sing this in your face. You know, Francis Scott Key is standing aboard a British frigate trying to defend an American that the British captured to force him to become a British sailor. If no one knows the history on that, the British would take our merchant marines, capture them, and force them to join the British Navy and serve under their flag because they were losing the Napoleonic War and they needed bodies to help them fight. So they were stealing ours. They were stealing our nationals. And here, Francis Scott Key, an attorney, is trying to get this guy released. And when the British started bombarding Baltimore, firing their rockets, and they were rockets. And there's pictures of them up on the internet. And I didn't even know back then they actually had rockets that they fired. You know, I'm thinking cannonballs. But they're firing these rockets into the air. And yes, you see the red glaring as they land in Baltimore, bombing the crap out of it. You know, Francis Scott Key wrote about the actual event, and this asshole is going to turn around and say this didn't happen, that the song means nothing to us, that because it's two octaves, it's not worth singing.
Well, they hate the flag. They hate the military. I guess the anthem was the next thing in line, and, you know, it's only going to get worse from here.
I mean, it wasn't even our national anthem come the Civil War, but the Union Army took it as a song to gather around the Star Spangled Banner. It wasn't until 1931, and it was something that our troops used to build their morale. And you know, sometimes when you had an American soldier crawling through the lines trying to get back to the American lines, the challenge would be, do you know the words to the Star Spangled Banner? And if you knew them, you were an American. And there's four verses to it. Not one. We all know the first verse. But you know what? I'm going to say to Bill Press, here is a seven-year-old who can sing the pants off of you, you idiot. Her name is Rima Marvani. She's only 7 years old when she recorded this and put it up on YouTube. Oh, God bless this girl. She's amazing.
Oh, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes in bright dawn perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming in the rocky red glare, double the
That was, she was 7 years old at the time. She recorded and uploaded this herself February 18th, 2010. So she's 9 years old now.
Wow.
Holy cow. You
sounds
know,
like
Bill
to me
Press,
it can be sung, right?
Up yours, Bill Press. You know what? I think I can go up on Twitter, and within 24 hours, I can raise enough money to buy you a one-way ticket to any communist, tyranny, dictatorship, Sharia law, whatever you want, one way, to your heart's desire, and I'll help you pack your bags.
Bill Press used to be on CNN's show Crossfire.
Who was that other guy on there with him?
Other liberal?
I don't think it was a liberal. Wasn't it a conservative or Republican?
Yeah, well, when it first started out, I'm schooled on Crossfire. I used to watch them old VCR tapes back in the detention hall. When it first started out, there was Pat Buchanan and a guy named Tom Braden. I don't know who Tom Braden is, but he was doing the show. Then Michael Kingsley took Braden's place, and Pat Novak took Pat Buchanan's place because Pat Buchanan and then got hired by Ronald Reagan. So then, then Bill Press took over, and then when Novak left, that guy with the bow tie took over on the conservative side. I forgot his
Tucker.
Name. Tucker. Yeah, Tucker. Tucker Carlson.
Oh, Tucker Carlson. Yeah.
Yeah, but Tucker and Bill Press were, and the show really, you know, honestly, in any kind of show, political show, whatever, you need good actors on the show and you need it to be interesting. When Tucker and Press were on it, this show totally was horrible. I mean, it was like I had.
I like Tucker.
I've met Tucker.
Tucker's more of a.
He's a Republican.
He's a Republican, but he's more of a negotiating type. He's not a, you know, go jump off a cliff, whatever type. Tucker's not like a Pat Buchanan and Alan Keyes. Them are the real conservatives.
Hey, listen, you know, I got to say that our guest has failed to show. I'm afraid that some of the postings I put up on the internet may have scared him away.
You bully.
Mike,
you know, Jermaine,
you bullying a U.S. Senator, Annie.
Jermaine Mike, calls in the show. Next thing you know, you got Annie dropping F-bombs and telling, swearing, mocking fat people and everything. And Jock Jones messaged me, Jermaine. He's coming tonight. So he gets to face his accusers. Annie, you better be there because I'm telling you, today's show is going to be...
Because Yanni has night blindness, I'm the one that has to drive, and we won't get back here probably until almost midnight. And at that point, honey, I'm going to be looking at my bed. I'm going to have a scotch first and hit those sheets. Trust me, it's been a long day. Hey, we're going to welcome Doc Jones aboard. Our guest, Mike Galvin, I think, backed
Rebell.
Out because what the heck is it called? The National Citizens Initiative for Democracy, which is just another excuse to force us into a tyranny. That initiative is just socialism disguised in sheep's clothing. It sounds good, but when you look at some of the people that are endorsing it, I'm going, oh my God. And when I read it last night, my blood started boil. And Jermaine, I remembered everything I said 2 years ago. And I'm lucky. You know, I managed to do that beyond the scotch. So welcome aboard, Doc.
Hey. Good to be on. I was working out in the garage, taking care of a few things. And then I just decided to look at the screen, and then I saw the message there. Mike, man, what happened, dude? I canceled my show for Wednesday, and no you. What happened?
Doc, you never called me back.
Oh,
I thought I saw you had. But we can do something. What he's talking about is I left a message on D-Day. I wanted to do a tribute part one on Doc Jones's show. And then part two on conservative primetime. But we, you know, it doesn't have to be D-Day anniversary to do it. We can do it at any time. But, Doc, okay. You better be there tonight because you got a lot of accusers. You and Sarge are on, you and Sarge going on trial. They calling you Uncle Tom, Oreo.
Oh, my goodness.
All them names.
The usual.
And, Mike, you call me the instigator.
You are the instigator,
okay.
Jermaine, wherever you go. But, I mean,
well,
Kayla
what,
says he's going to call.
I took a nap, so I'll be there. I'll be there,
well,
man, I guarantee.
You're at
man,
that age, you're
going
to take the nap in the afternoon.
Now, Doc Jones,
I know.
You leave Perry Still alone tonight. No, you know what happened
Perry
last night.
Perry
going
to be there?
Oh, listener Jermaine with his. Now you leave. Yeah, right. I remember there was this brawl being broke up. This brawl was happening with chains. People were swinging these bicycle chains, and the guy who was enjoying it was saying, "Okay, now break it up, fellas. Okay, fellas, break it up." Like in the lowest tone. Listener Jermaine. Yeah, now Doc Jones. Yeah. Well, you know, I decided. Well, you know, if they're gonna call the conservative, dark people those kind of names, well. Let's have them prove it. You know, that God forbid you have different political views or God forbid you appreciate the money you've earned on your own and not been given to you.
Oh, no doubt. Is Perry going to be there tonight?
I messaged Perry last night. He was he had a show, so I don't know. But Kayla's coming. Warlord X is coming. So all the guys that use those names, and you know, I didn't realize this, but I told Jermaine is I want to read who exactly Uncle Tom is. Things throughout history get so Uncle Tom was like he ran the Underground Railroad. Where the hell did he get off making it look like Uncle Tom is a Judas?
No, and
yeah,
he sacrificed his life to allow others to remain free.
Well, that's exactly right. The name Uncle Tom was once revered, and now it's vilified. It's kind of like gay has become a bad word when gay used to just mean happy.
Basically, what they mean to call us is house Negroes.
Yes, house Negroes.
Well, Jermaine, does that mean to tell me that you are you're African American?
I am.
Oh, man.
No, African-American. He's nothing about African-American.
Look, I'm not real sensitive. You call me black, you can call me African-American. But, I mean, none of that offends me. Whatever.
Well, yeah. It doesn't
I just call you
either. Pie. It doesn't, you know what? I agree. It doesn't offend me at all. It embarrasses me. You know, I think on my birth certificate it says Negro. I was Negro for a while. And then sometime in the 70s, I became black, I think. And then the early 80s, I went from Negro, from black, to being African-American all of a sudden. And I have no idea who started that. When did that get started? Did somebody just say, hey, you know, from now on, we're African-American? You know, we're not black anymore. I think we were one other thing in between there. So we've been four different ethnic groups in the span of my 50 years on this planet, which is embarrassing. I'm wondering what we're going to be, you know, in the next 20 years. How is it going to change? Or if we're just going to go ahead and settle on being African American, which is it's a complete embarrassment to me.
I just had an epiphany. I just had an epiphany. Remember when they were doing the census, and they were coming around, and everyone was complaining about it because if you were a gentleman of your descent, you had the choice whether or not you were black, you were African American, you were Negro, and you had a choice of which one to check. I know why they did that. They're taking a census of seeing what you identify with. And whatever the majority says, that's going to be your new label.
Is it illegal to check the wrong box?
I don't even think I took the census. I don't even think anybody came to my house. I think they may have come to the house, but they didn't, I think they sent something in the mail or something, and it was filled out.
I just checked off American, and any question I found offensive, I left blank.
Yeah, I would have written in American if it,
that's what I did.
It wasn't there. Yeah,
that's exactly what I wrote in. You know,
I can't recall any other ethnic group that has been three different ethnicities in the span of 50 years or four. I'm leaving one out. I can't remember what that other one is. Seriously, there's one more. But,
so what's the politically correct term now?
Well, politically correct is African American. Which absolutely makes no sense to me, you know, unless you, because like my man Timon said, whose clip I play on my show every now and then, and some of you also may play in some of his clips, you know, what do you call a white person who originated from Africa? Do you call them African Americans too?
Good point.
You know, so it's just it's just an odd sort of
thing. Go ahead, Doc.
Well,
I saw Don King. Don King was talking about he was on Larry King. Larry King every now and then comes out of retirement. Well, anyway, Don King. Now he's talking about blacks and browns. And I thought, where the hell did the brown come from?
We're about to get really confused.
Yeah, I know. He goes, they were talking about, they read on the application about non-discriminatory or whatever, you know, race, color, creed, ethnic, or what, except, and he says, well, I think it needs to be capitalized. He goes, yeah, and especially for blacks and browns. Thinking, what the hell's a brown? Where the hell did that come from, a UPS worker?
What about the tans or the mochas? You know, we gotta add them in there because we don't want to be, the political correctness has just gone wild. Anybody hear about the dwarfs or the midgets or what do you call them now? Little people, right? They are those funny looking little dudes. They give me the creeps. Actually, can I be honest?
Vertically inclined.
They creep me out.
Not nice. They give you the – little people give you the – that is going to make 6 p.m. news. Jermaine, we're in trouble.
Oh, now, and so Randy Newman took a lot of heat for his song,
Little
People.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doc.
Anyway, they creep me out. But I don't like carnies, dwarfs, or clowns. I don't like them at all. There's something going on there. My apologies to any of you who are listening who have family who are carnies, who work in those little carnivals, those traveling carnivals, and clowns. I don't like clowns at all. I have clown phobia, and that's the truth. I do. I don't dig clowns at all. But because, you know, we had a clown in Chicago, but, you know, John Wayne Gacy, you know, we called him the killer clown because, you know, he was, you know, doing all kinds of weird stuff. But nevertheless, these dwarfs, I guess little people is the right term for them these days, are going to have a 100 or 250 dwarf march. Do you hear about that?
Anybody? No.
Oh, go ahead.
No, but they have a convention in Las Vegas every year.
Well, because of the Snow White movie, and they're using CG or hobbits or something, CG hobbits for dwarfs in the movie. You know, nobody's heard of that. I'm serious. And so now they're pissed because they're not going to be acting in this movie. They want their just due. They want to be included in acting in these movies, and they believe that they're being discriminated against because, you know, in favor of CG characters. It's a true story. Somebody should look it up. I don't know why you guys don't know this. But if you know anything about dwarves, I tell you what, somebody should – have you ever seen the movie, the behind-the-scenes making of The Wizard of Oz?
I was just about to mention that. Yes, I have seen that.
How those little freaky little dudes and chicks were just kind of wild. They had them all in this big hotel room, and they were, like, really wild and freaky, and apparently they got, like, really strong libidos, and they were, like, you know, wilding out while they were making the movie. Anybody know anything about that?
Why did the shows go back into sex?
But Jermaine got here. See, that's what happens, Andy. You let the black people go crazy on your show. That's what happens.
That's all we start talking about, sex and violence.
You know, Doc, what you were saying, Doc Jones, that little tattoo from Fantasy Island, he was a little pimp.
Yeah, him too. He was a little pervert. That's what he was. He was a pervert.
We're down to our last 5 minutes. Let me wind down. All right, I want to let you guys know that next week it's going to be Ladies Week. It's going to be Ladies Week next week, and the following week it's going to be Music Week. Ladies Week on Tuesday, it's the primary here in South Carolina. And I don't know if there's any other primary going on across the state, across the nation, but my guest is running for a seat here in South Carolina. She is a retired military. She served in Iraq in Desert Storm. Her name is Catherine Jennerette. Look her up, Jennerette. She is a knockout. She is gorgeous. She is smart, and I think she may win. She'll be on Tuesday. On Friday, Bettina Viviano is coming back. She'll be back on Friday. And then next week, we have two new up-and-coming musicians, both conservatives. We've got Bruce Dingby. He's country western. And then the other one, if I can pronounce his name right, is Xander Deimos. And he is more of new age music, but they both are strong conservatives. So we're going to have next week Ladies Week and the following week Music Week. You guys got to join me.
Sounds good.
I'll be here.
I'll be there too. It's like the, about freaky dwarfs or anything.
No, Doc, it would be it's amazing, Doc, that you faced war, you faced gun barrels, possible death. And a midget scares you. I mean,
midget is incorrect. I mean, that's offensive. I'm offended by that word. So midget, dwarf, little fat-fingered people.
Well, Jermaine, we know you've got a show tonight, and that's going to be absolutely.
Are you changing the subject?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Doc, you having a show tonight?
No. Tesla does a show and I think this show starts at 7, and I have no interest in competing with him, so I don't do a show on Friday.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to – I'm sorry, I'm dying.
So funny.
Oh, my. I'm really confused
we
about
just
now,
got
but
like
okay.
A 3 minute, 3 minutes of Doc Jones talking about midgets and clowns.
What I did want to do was play the new national anthem for Obama. So I'm going to close the show out with something that, of course, Glenn Beck put this together after Bill Preston his complaint about our national anthem. So, I'm sorry, I'm tired.
All right. See you guys tonight.
Have fun, and I'll talk to you all later. So please remember, we'll be back here again 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Same bat channel, same bat station. Until then, have a safe week and God bless.
All right.